Well, I mean, the first thing is don't be afraid. No matter what your vocation is, don't be afraid to do what God's will is. Or if you are afraid, ask Him to help you to not be afraid and help you to do whatever He asks.
Hello and welcome. My name is Rachel, and you're listening to episode 188 of Candid Catholic Convos, a show about Catholicism that enriches your faith, answers your questions, and meets you wherever you're at on your faith journey. It's a brand new month, which means a brand new theme for our podcast. This month's theme is Called by Name, and each week we'll be exploring how God calls each of us uniquely. But first, let's start with Scripture. Today's reading is from John chapter 21, verses 15 through 17. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Feed my lambs." A second time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him a third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was grieved because he had said to him a third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep." This is a striking moment in John's gospel after the resurrection. Not a grand teaching or a miracle, but an intimate conversation between friends. Jesus asks Peter three times, "Do you love me?" And each time Peter responds, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And each time Jesus entrusts him with a mission, "Feed my lambs, tend my sheep, feed my sheep." This encounter is more than just a reconciliation after Peter's three denials. It's a profound moment of calling and commissioning. Jesus doesn't shame Peter for his past failures. Instead, he renews him through love and trust. It's as if Jesus is saying, "Peter, I still choose you. I still believe in you. Love me, and let that love guide your service." For anyone preparing for priesthood, this passage speaks volumes. Before a man is called to serve at the altar, to preach, or to hear confessions, he's first called to love Jesus. That love is the foundation of everything that follows. The priesthood isn't a job or a role. It's a relationship. It's a daily yes to Christ's question, "Do you love me?" And in that love, Jesus entrusts his flock, his people, to the care of his priests. Not as owners, but as shepherds who reflect his own heart. To feed my sheep means to nourish others with the word of God, to offer the sacraments faithfully, to be a presence of mercy and compassion in a hungry and hurting world. For all of us, this passage is also a reminder. Each of us in our own vocation is invited to hear the same question, "Do you love me?" And our answer, whether through priesthood, marriage, religious life, or everyday discipleship, shapes how we live and serve. When we think about priesthood, one saint naturally comes to mind and is perfect for today's saint spotlight. Saint John Vianney, the patron saint of parish priests. Born in France in 1786, John Vianney was not a naturally gifted student. In fact, he struggled academically, especially with Latin, which nearly kept him from being ordained. But what he lacked in intellectual brilliance, he more than made up for in holiness, perseverance, and love for God's people. As a parish priest in the small village of Ars, France, Father Vianney transformed a sleepy parish into a thriving center of faith. He spent countless hours in the confessional, sometimes up to 16 hours a day, listening, guiding, and offering mercy. Pilgrims came from all over Europe to seek his counsel and the peace of Christ through him. His life reminds us that the priesthood is not about personal perfection or prestige, but about humble service, being a bridge between God and his people. Saint John Vianney once said, "The priesthood is the love of the heart of Jesus." And as we reflect on those preparing for ordination today, may we pray that their hearts, like his, will be shaped entirely by that same love. With the example of St. John Vianney and our call from Jesus to love him, let's now dive into today's marquee topic, preparing for priesthood. Deacon Drew Heidelbaugh sits down with me today to discuss how he discerned his vocation and the mental gymnastics that went along with it. Deacon Drew, welcome to Candid Catholic Convos. I'm really excited to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So for those who maybe haven't met you yet or haven't had the opportunity to talk to you, tell me a little bit about yourself, like, you know, what your home, where your home parish is, you know, a little bit about growing up. Tell me all about Deacon Drew.
Okay. Grew up in Camp Hill, PA, which is right near Harrisburg. I was raised Catholic. My dad converted, so he took his faith seriously. So I think that made both my parents kind of intentional Catholics. So that was good for me. I didn't care about my faith at all as I was growing up. I thought it was boring going to Mass. Thought CCD was boring. But yeah, when I was maybe 14, I went to a men's conference with my dad and my grandpa. And so I saw people who genuinely cared about the faith. And that inspired me, like they were passionate men. So I started reading the Bible more. I started praying more. Yeah, that started me getting more into my faith. But I guess maybe before I go into my vocational, I'm like just playing the tape of my vocation because people ask this all the time. Well, like, how did you decide to go to seminary and everything? But yeah, anyway, so but three siblings, one older brother, two younger sisters. I'm the only one in a religious vocation or something. So actually, my grandpa's a deacon, though, and my dad is going to be ordained a deacon next year. So that's kind of cool. Runs in the family a little bit. But I don't know. Pretty normal childhood, I think. Public school, by the way. I went to Cumberland Valley High School. So
stop it. What year did you graduate?
2017.
Oh, okay. Never mind. I graduated in 2004.
So. Oh, okay.
It's changed a lot since I graduated.
Yes, it has. Awesome. It's becoming more and more like a college. It's so big.
It is such a campus now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that you mentioned that your parents were intentional with their faith because I was the same way. I was cradle Catholic, went to Catholic school, but I don't feel like I ever took ownership of my faith until I was significantly older. So that's really cool that your parents were very intentional about setting that example for you. But I feel like my kids are the same way because my kids go to CCD currently and they're like, oh, okay.
It's tough. It's not easy to teach either, you know,
exactly.
CCD, but
they are walking saints, in my opinion. Teachers and CCD and religious ed, they are all walking saints.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that your grandfather's a deacon and that your dad's becoming a deacon.
Right.
When did you first consider the priesthood as an option, and when did you seriously start to discern?
I didn't think about it at all until I was in high school. I had never seen a priest under like 60, and I'd never seen a seminarian at all because I, you know, going to public school, they didn't come visit the school or anything like that. So it didn't occur to me that you could just go and be a priest as a young person. I'm sure my grandpa's example, you know, affected me growing up, but it never made me think, oh, I should do something like that. You know, when I was in high school, a friend of mine invited me to Quo Vadis Days, which is a, you know, retreat for young men, like 15 to 25, I think is the age group, to pray and like play sports and games and stuff. And they talk about the priesthood. You kind of like pray about your vocation. What's funny is my friend didn't tell me it was about the priesthood because he didn't think I would go. He told me that a couple of years ago that he was like trying to convince me to go. But so I went and I had a good time, but I didn't want to be a priest initially because I wanted to get married. And so I was doing mental gymnastics to like make God not want me to be a priest. There was a girl I was talking to at the time I really liked. And so I said, Lord, how about this? If it doesn't work out with this girl, I'll take it as a sign that you want me to be a priest. So that didn't end up making any difference in the end, but that's what I prayed. And then we dated for like 6 months. The whole time I was just trying not to think about the priesthood, trying to like push it back in my mind. I just couldn't avoid the thought. So eventually I started feeling like I was fighting God. So one night I just said, okay, Lord, it seems like you want me to be a priest. So I guess that's what I'll do. And as soon as I made that decision, there was a real peace that came over me, and suddenly I was excited to be a priest. Told my girlfriend like the next day or two or something like that, and she was like, "Oh, good for you." So great reaction as far as girlfriends go, but so obviously we broke up, but I kind of had a pretty firm sense of my vocation after that. Like, I just kind of thought, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. So after high school, I went to seminary. But
I think that's funny that your friend didn't want to tell you it was for deserting the priesthood.
I don't see him in seminary now either. So,
but that's awesome that and especially having to tell a girlfriend, that must have been weighing on you at some point. Did you have any other like doubts or concerns walking into seminary? Like, I guess you kind of had a little bit of an idea having attended Quo Vadis days, but what kind of misconceptions did you have or that other people who have talked to you have had about seminary? And then what did you learn? Like, I had this misconception, but it was proven wrong because this is actually the case.
I don't really remember having any expectations going into seminary. I don't think I really knew what maybe I was just thought it would be like Quo Vadis days. I don't know. I don't remember thinking too much about that. The most common thing for guys entering seminary, the misconception is that we're like these really holy, perfect people, and we just pray and study all day, which is not the case. Obviously, we have work to do, and you know, just like a regular college, you go to mass every day, and there's you know, prayer is a central part of that. But we like play sports. I love playing soccer and basketball. Basketball is probably my favorite, but really, whatever's going on, I'll play just to, you know, relax. So guys like watch movies and print, anything normal people do, as long as it's not a sin, like we'll probably do it too. That's a big misconception. Guys sometimes have to like come to Quo Vadis days or visit the seminary or something to get over that hump of feeling like this is this castle in the clouds. Yeah, it's like a normal university, but a lot smaller, and, you know, with prayer integrated into it, and we're all trying to do the same thing. So another one is you don't have to be sure that you're going to be a priest. Like, you don't just go to seminary and then you sign in blood and you become a priest. I kind of felt pretty sure myself. I mean, I had plenty of times throughout seminary where I, you know, thought about either leaving to get married or to go to a religious order or something like that. But I kind of had that feeling that this is what God wants me to do, and this is what I want to do throughout the whole time, you know. But there were many times that I thought for different reasons about doing something else. And that's pretty normal. Like, a lot of guys will come to seminary saying, well, I'll just try this for a year and see if it works, and then I'll leave. And that's totally fine, because it's a place for us to discern the priesthood and not just like you're going to be a priest for sure, you know. So that's another misconception, but yeah, those are probably the biggest ones.
Yeah. I like that you mentioned that you don't have to sign on the dotted line in blood kind of thing. It's not like, I compare it to like joining the military, whereas if once you sign that dotted line, like you belong to the military, where that's not necessarily the case with seminary. I think that's important to understand. So how long have you been in seminary now?
This is my 9th year.
Oh, wow. So in those 9 years, what has been your favorite thing? Like, what has stuck out or what has surprised you about being in seminary?
I had a lot of things over 9 years. I have a million stories. I guess I've loved getting to know the guys here. I've made a lot of close friends. That's a really unique thing about seminary, because we're all doing the same thing and we all share our faith in God. We can build some pretty close friendships. So that's been great. Maybe the biggest surprise is just just in general, the gifts of God, like blessing me, especially in retreats. We do a retreat every year, usually a 5-day silent retreat. That's, you know, can be tough at first, but I would never think that I would enjoy so much being in whatever random place in silence for 5 days with nothing but the Lord and my thoughts. And but he just has really given me some amazing graces during those times, and just to show me his love for me, and, you know, how he knows me individually and my life. So It's just changed my life in incredible ways. Like I couldn't have guessed how my life would change being here, to be like such an adventure. So yeah, I feel like when I tell people that, like in classrooms, I'll say it, when I visit schools, and I feel like they don't believe me. Like it can't be that great. You're in seminary. You go, you study, you pray, but I can't really explain it. It is. So, because I feel like I'm doing what I was made to do.
That's one of the quotes that I have this year that like defines me. It's from Saint Catherine of Siena, and she says, "Be who you were meant to be, and be who God meant for you to be, and you will set the world on fire." And I feel like when you're like living in that, you're just completely abandoned yourself to God's will. It's everything just seems lighter, a lot more fun, like you were saying. That's awesome. And I would probably be one of those kids being like, psh, "Yeah, right." Like I can't,
Yeah,
but.
but that's the thing. Like if we're like if you fall into like the trap of living for money or something dumb like that, I mean it really just ties you down. Whereas if you're free to do God's will, like that's not a constraint. It's like now I don't have to worry about anything and I can just live the life that God has given me, and he provides all kinds of things that he knows that I like. But yeah,
Yeah, that's such
it's a
an
good
important
life.
reminder. Yeah, it really is. When you, it's like you're just, I don't know how else to describe it. Everything just seems easier. So now you are considered a transitional deacon, is that correct? Okay. So during that time, or during this time, because you still have a few months before priesthood ordination, where have you served, and how do you feel like this is helping you prepare for priesthood?
My assignment this year is St. Leo's in Lancaster. So I live there in the summer, and then this year, like I come back to seminary in August. And then, so now on weekends, I'm going back and forth to the parish to serve masses and preach sometimes and do whatever I can to help out around the parish. So yeah, it's been an awesome year. It feels crazy. Obviously, being 9 years in, I felt like this year would never ever come. So yeah, being so close to priesthood is a powerful thing, very exciting. And just being able to do real ministry now, I mean, it's just what I've been wanting to do for a long time. And yeah, it's a good step to move into priesthood. Because for example, I'm starting to feel kind of the identity of the priesthood. It's kind of surprising to me how much people respect me just because I'm wearing a collar. Like whether I'm a priest or a deacon, I'm not a priest yet, but they still, like if I show up to things, they value that a ton. Like I went to a little youth group thing over the summer because I was desperate for something to happen around the parish because there's nothing that really happens in the summer. So I hung out with these kids and like played games with them. And it was a lot of fun. And then they wrote me a thank you note afterwards saying, "Thank you for coming to our thing. It really meant a lot to us." I was like, "Wow." So, like, that's all it takes, but it's a humbling thing. Like, why I don't deserve this. Why do I deserve this kind of recognition for just visiting you guys? But it's a sign of the power of the priesthood and, being a spiritual father. Like, that's what I'm called to be. It can be scary sometimes, but also really rewarding in situations like that. So yeah, so things like that have been really formative for me as to stepping into the identity of the priesthood.
I think that's great that you were able to get out and into the parish life, especially in the summertime when, like you said, nothing's really happening because people are on vacation or kids are out of school, versus now where you're not only balancing seminary life, you're balancing parish life as well. So that's really neat that it's kind of giving you that dual-sided picture of living in the vocation. Like you said, you're getting ready for that identity of becoming a priest. I think that that's really cool. Is there an aspect of ministry currently that you enjoy the most, or that you're looking forward to in the priesthood?
I think what I enjoy most, other than just like playing basketball with kids at the school, I mean, I guess you call that ministry. For me, it's just a lot of fun. But I love preaching. I've definitely felt the weight of it more this year, where I'm thinking about what to say and praying about what to say and feeling the responsibility to preach the gospel because I've received so much and I really want everyone to experience the love of God. But it's not always easy to communicate that. But what's really awesome about preaching is I can speak about really meaningful things that everyone cares about, but that we're probably not going to talk about in normal conversations. So I can kind of speak to people's lives in a way that I can't or couldn't before I started preaching. So that's a really cool thing, an awesome responsibility, but a privilege for sure.
Absolutely. And I would 100% consider playing basketball with the kids and ministry because how else are you going to reach them, right?
Yeah, I make a lot of friends that way.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I feel like, especially when I was in Catholic school, you mentioned about how walking in with the collar kind of carries this weight. And I remember being in Catholic school and like anytime the priest or the deacon would walk in, it was like, shh, 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 here he comes. Everybody be on your best behavior kind of thing. And then especially working here at the diocese, getting to know a lot of the priests and deacons on a first name basis, it's like, oh, they are actual people who enjoy sports and movies and things that the rest of us like to do. And I think that that's a humbling reminder that priests are just like us, just called to holiness in a different manner. They're called to help the rest of us to holiness, and feeling like you're approachable is so important, especially for someone like me. But I would imagine, you know, kids or people who have been away from the church for a while, to know that you're approachable in such a way, I think is incredibly impactful.
Yeah, I think there are some like really important things about having getting understanding of priests and clerics as real people too, because I mean, in a way, we represent God, and it's like if you're afraid of God and feel like you can't approach him at all, then that's a problem. And like you have to understand that he you know, wants, he loves us and knows us as we are. And but part of that, too, is I think people just naturally think that they can't be holy because or, you know, live for God or do great things because they're just normal people. Like, well, all of us are like that, but we're just living our daily lives and doing the things that we do, you know, eat, sleep, work, whatever. But we see the stained glass windows of the saints and we think, well, I could never do that. But I think part of the great things about when we can see the humanity of a priest or anybody in a religious vocation is it reminds us, oh yeah, God can do that for me too. I think that really everybody needs to learn that at some point, that it's not about my having the ability to do great things for God because I'm just great. It's God calls people who don't know what they're doing and are not able to do what he asked them to do, but he helps them and he does it in them. So I think that's a switch that everybody has to make at some point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's for any young man listening, what advice would you give to someone who's discerning or who may be reluctant to hear the call? You mentioned that you were trying to do these mental gymnastics to avoid the call that you couldn't avoid. So what would you say to somebody who was in your position 9 years ago?
Well, I mean, the first thing is don't be afraid, because God really does know what's best for us. I mean, we were made to give ourselves in love to him, to receive his love and to give that to other people, give that back to him. And we're really not happy unless we can do that. So no matter what your vocation is, don't be afraid to do what God's will is. Or if you are afraid, ask him to help you to not be afraid and help you to do whatever he asks. Actually, another great thing that came into my mind just now is consecrate your vocation to Mary. Yeah, she's been instrumental for my vocation, just as someone that I rely on, because I know that I can't do this without God and without help. You know, I can't do it on my own. So that gives me a confidence, you know, to rely on her rather than myself, that it feels easier. I can, you know, I can be more confident that way. So yeah, if you do that, she'll definitely help you out to do whatever it is that God wants you to do. Yeah, so don't be afraid. Offer your vocation to Mary. And then also, if you're discerning, have a routine of prayer. I mean, I think everybody should do that anyway, but just to spend time every day with God. Maybe you do Lectio Divina, which is like praying with a passage from the Bible. Even if it's just 10 minutes, I think the important thing is that every day you have that routine, because it keeps you grounded in God, who's the most important person in our lives, and it'll help you hear his voice. He's not going to let you miss it if you're doing that. So that's key.
I love that. And it helps you notice the little ways that he is making himself known in everyday life. I like to call coincidences, you know, little miracles where God decides to remain anonymous. And you start to notice stuff like that when you have a regular prayer life. Like, it feels like if you don't, everything else kind of seems off or like is not gelling just quite right. But when you have that solid prayer life, everything seems to fall into place a little bit easier. I don't know, but I feel like that's especially important when you're discerning, and not even just the priesthood, but if you're discerning a marriage or a dating relationship or changing jobs, like there's really nothing prayer or Mary can't help with. I mean, Mama Mary is just like that mama bear that you can run to whenever you need help with something. That's such an important reminder.
Yeah.
Well, Deacon Drew, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us. We're going to be praying for you all throughout these next several months, because June will be here before we know it, and you will be Father Drew, and that is going to be so exciting. I can't wait.
Yeah. Awesome. I'm really excited. Yeah. Thanks for having me too. This was good. So I appreciate it.
And that's our show. Candid Catholic Convos is brought to you by the Diocese of Harrisburg, hosted and sound engineered by me, Rachel Trochet, and produced by Rachel Bryson. If today's episode resonated with you, please share it on social media. You can tag us using @HBGDiocese. Make sure you also subscribe on your preferred listening platform so you never miss an episode. And if you'd like to support our production efforts, a donation to our diocesan annual campaign would benefit us greatly in continuing our ministry. Next week, we're discussing how God can sometimes redirect us in our calling. We're also closing out the month with a special listener Q&A episode featuring your questions. Whether it's about the faith, church teachings, traditions, prayer life, or anything you've been wrestling with, we're all ears. Submit your questions via the link on our Facebook page, and at the end of the month, we'll answer 3 to 5 of them on the program. So like, subscribe, keep praying for us, and we'll keep praying for you.